Okay, picking back up on the 11th step, page 86, they're going to give us more directions on what we're going to be doing during our day. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. And this is where we bring prayer in. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Now that's the promise, but here's the warning. Still being inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We may pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it, and that's another promise. Most of what I pulled something out of the 12 and 12 because it kind of goes with the warning they've given us on page 16 of 12 and 12. It says, going it alone in spiritual matters is dangerous. How many times have we heard well-intentioned people claim the guidance of God when it was all too plain they were sorely mistaken? And one of the things I do is I can get cocky without feeling cocky. It's like, you know, how many times have you seen self-confidence turn to conceit or self-reliance turn to arrogance? And these things are very subtle changes, but they're all things based out of self. And myself can come in and cut myself off from God even when I'm praying and even when I think that I'm seeking God's will and I'm acting upon that in my daily life. And the most effective tool that I have in my spiritual toolkit to this day is my sponsor. And my sponsor seems to not have that veil, you know. There's a veil that hangs in front of my face, and I guarantee you can't see it, but it's there. And my veil seems to be made up of my wants, my fears, and my desires, and it can distort my view of reality at any given time, or I won't get the complete message. I won't see exactly what's going on. I'll see enough of it to make a judgment, but I might be missing something. Now, my sponsor simply doesn't have the veil about my life. Now, he may have a veil about his life, which is why he has a sponsor. But one of the things that I do with any kind of answer that I get from God that is of any significance, before I make any kind of major decision, I sit down and I prepare for a talk with my sponsor. And I do it in that manner. I call him up and I say, I got something to talk to you about. I'm going to need a little bit of time. When can we do this? You know, I don't want to catch him at a meeting like passing ships in the night and force him into giving me an answer he doesn't have time to think about. If I want to use the process, I like the fact that they tell you, you know, there's no big deals in Alcoholics Anonymous and there's no emergencies in Alcoholics Anonymous. Of course, unless our lives are involved, you know. I mean, my favorite expression, it's only a big deal because it's happening to you, kid, you know, which is absolutely true. So one of the things, the book's promising us that having just made conscious contact and being inexperienced at this, we're going to pay for this. Ooh, we're going to pay for it. All kinds of absurd ideas and actions. So how can we defend against that? And the literature in Alcoholics Anonymous suggests that we have a spiritual advisor or a sponsor, that we're willing, we're humble enough to realize that perhaps we don't have 100% accuracy in our conscious contact in the message we receive, because we don't want to ever be so verbose or arrogant that we think we're void of self-will, that our self-will and our self-centered fear isn't going to come in and distort these things from time to time. So it's important that we have a spiritual advisor in the form of a sponsor, hopefully in Alcoholics Anonymous, somebody we've built a relationship with, that we've done some inventory work with. When I start sponsoring men that have been sober for a while and they haven't done inventory work with me and they say, well, I've already done an inventory, I always ask them, well, I think it'd be very important if we're going to go forward from here and I'm going to be able to be an asset to you, that we're going to need to do an inventory. Now, you don't need to do that right now, but it's going to be required because I can't help you if I don't know where you came from. It's an important part of what happens between a sponsor and a sponsee is understanding. And that's why in that fifth step, you know, as sponsors, I always try to be as revealing as I can about myself. I do that for a couple of reasons. One, to reduce the feelings of uniqueness that somebody might feel when they're sharing these intimate details about themselves. But also, I think it's fair. I think it's just fair. You're going to open up the cupboard of your soul and let me take a good look. Well, why don't I open up mine and let you take a good look? We're on equal footing then. The thing about sponsorship in that regard is the best piece of information we have in Alcoholics Anonymous in our literature is the pamphlet Questions and Answers on Sponsorship, which most of us are familiar with, but most of us haven't taken the time to really sit down and study it like literature. But in there, it's very clear about the idea that there's not a hierarchy here. There's a fortunate situation based on one individual's been sober longer, which means he's garnered more sober experience. He may have a greater understanding of the spiritual principles based on his experience, strength, and hope, and he's willing to share that with the other person. But there's no hierarchy. There's one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Our literature's clear about that. So my sponsor's not my God. My sponsor's not better than me. My sponsor's another spiritual man trying to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's sober 33 years to my 16. Do I want what he has? Yeah, I want that time I haven't been able to stay sober yet. I need to know what he went through, how he did that. How did he stay involved in Alcoholics Anonymous? He has great experience to share with me because he's an active, happy member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would like to be able to replicate what he has done in some fashion in my life. That's what I want, what he has, a spiritual sober life in the long haul. And I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to get that time. I can only live one day at a time. So I tap into his experience and I do that with my spiritual endeavors and I live my life with a degree of transparency that I never thought was possible between two human beings. And that degree of transparency, the important increment in that is trust. That I have great trust in my sponsor. And that doesn't mean he's a perfect person. This means I have great trust that he believes in God and follows God. So, and that doesn't mean he never makes mistakes. He'll be the first to admit it. But that transparency I've been able to achieve with him and the other sponsors I've had have made a huge difference in my life because, you know, two heads are better than one. And having a fresh set of eyes on my life without my emotions attached with that view has been indispensable to me. And in spiritual matters, it's essential. I think all of us, I'll speak for myself, I'm highly emotional. I can be highly volatile. I'm quick to fear. I'm quick to worst case scenario. My wife's nickname for me is Doomsday Don. It's just the way my personality works. When I go through anything in life, I go to worst case scenario. I go, well, I can accept that, and then I work forward from there. It's like that weird little comfort I get of knowing it's never going to be that bad, you know. So, well, if the whole world ends, I can handle that, and then it gets better from there. Page 87 continues, we usually conclude this period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we will be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will, and we're careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others may be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. And not to step on a soapbox or anything, but you will hear a lot of stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous that isn't Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's okay. It's been going on since the inception of AA, and we'll be fine with it. We've had different things, different movements. You know, I love the old timers talk about, you know, 20, 25 years ago, it wasn't unusual to go into some men's meetings in some parts of the country and guys were sitting there with teddy bears on their lap. I only wish I'd gotten sober early enough to actually see that and make fun of it, but I wasn't sober yet. And there are different movements that are popular culture at the time. And, you know, you will hear about people praying for money and you hear about people praying for success. And you will hear about, you know, I hear a lot of that in some of the meetings I'm attending on a regular basis. So it's my experience that's going on, the God of abundance and this thing that I guess if we're doing well in the outside stuff in our life, it means that God loves us and we somehow have tapped into him. And if we don't have that stuff, then we need to pray harder and that there's something cutting us off from this God of abundance who... This is not Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not a self-help program. If you want a self-help program, Tony Robbins is highly recommended by some people, but this is not Tony Robbins. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a selfless program. This is a program based on the idea that under our own steam, our own power, all we have the ability to do is drink ourselves dead eventually. Or if we are fortunate enough to obtain only one-third of the answer to the riddle of alcoholism, the abstinence angle, what we will get to do is stay sober physically, suffer from untreated alcoholism, and make everyone wish around us we would just drink and die and get it over with. Because we're really screwing up their buzz. My wife said to me once, she goes, I know you've said that your attitude towards women has changed. I just want to know when it's going to improve. It's hard to find love like that. Page 88 tells us the truth about ourselves. We alcoholics are undisciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is devoted entirely to the 12th step. Before we go on to the 12th step, there's a couple of things I want to touch on. Just on a personal level, this is not from the big book. I'm going to share my experience on some things that I've learned about my relationship with God, where I'm at today, where I started from, and what occurred between those two intervals that brings me to where I'm at today. And I need to preface this by saying that I completely anticipate the next year I will not be in this spiritual location, and that a year from after that I will not be in that spiritual location. And that, I could be wrong, but that's based on 16 years of experience of spiritual growth. One of the wonderful things I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is that if you stay in the process and you stay in 10, 11, and 12 to the best of your ability with consistency and momentum, and you do the things that we talk about in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you do them and you bring these principles into your homes and affairs, you'll change and you'll continue to change. And what a great promise that is, because so many things in my life I've just gotten burned out on. You know, I just loved them so much in the beginning, but at a certain point you hit proficiency with it, or you find out that's all there really is to it. And this is something that keeps revealing itself to me in a widening scope. And the world doesn't change, but my ability to love within it does. And my capacity for love increases. And my growth and understanding and effectiveness changes in Alcoholics Anonymous without my permission and seemingly without great effort on my part if I stay in the process. A lot of my problems, I'll tell you, when I'm truly living in the third step, the seventh step, and the 11th step in a true manner, true just means what I have that day I bring to the game. I may not have as much some days as others, but what I've got that day I bring. And I'm really trying to seek God's will and try to figure out how he wants me to live and how I'm supposed to serve him and you. If I'm really doing that, my character defects don't stand a chance. They really don't. I don't have to spend a lot of time working on my character defects. We talked earlier about selfishness and self-centeredness being the root of the problem. The solution to my selfishness and self-centeredness is to empty myself of that stuff. And I don't know any other way to do that than to seek God. I don't know any other way to do that than to try to figure out what God's will is for me through prayer and meditation and some of the things that we've read and some of the things where I bring this structure. As the book says, I'm undisciplined, so I need some type of structure in my life where I'm not so free-floating. The feelings may be free-floating. The experience may be ethereal. It may be wonderful. It may be mystical. But a lot of the devices that I use to produce those results are mechanical in nature. The time that I do things, the amount of time that I rely to them, the time that I show up to meetings at a certain point in time before the meeting starts, so I have time to execute a plan, a spiritual plan when I attend meetings, so I get more out of meetings. All these things that I've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I am undisciplined. And there's humility involved with being able to read that in the book and take it to heart and realize it's not a condemnation. We're not judging, we're just reporting. We alcoholics are undisciplined people, and we let God discipline us in this manner. We're not going to let our sponsors discipline us. We're not going to let society discipline us. Human beings have been trying to discipline alcoholics since the beginning of time. It just doesn't work. But it says we let God. So you have to grant permission to let God into your heart. He may want to be there with everything, and he's ready, always has been, but I have to get out of the way. I have to invite God into my life. Early in my sobriety, I developed, through attending meetings and listening to my sponsor and only being able to hear what I could hear at the time, what I call bookend spirituality. Bookend spirituality consists of getting up in the morning, saying good morning to God, and as you become more spiritually developed in the days and weeks and months, you learn to add things to that good morning God, and you're on your knees and you're next to your bed, and you say these prayers, and you're thinking, what a good boy am I in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you feel good, and you're doing what your sponsor asked you, and he said, holy cow, look at me, I'm praying, I'm trying, and there's a certain amount of joy associated with that, that I'm in the game, I'm trying to do it by the numbers, I'm not trying to cut any corners. And then I go ahead and I run my entire day on self-will. And and I get crazy and I do what I do and I get what I get. And I get to a meeting that night. My sponsor and his cronies and my friends do spiritual triage on me. And they stop the spiritual bleeding and they tell me what to say. And they tell me what to read in the book. And I feel better and I feel hopeful and I experience that feeling that feels like hope that we get when we're new and we attend meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I leave the meeting and I go home. And before I go to bed that night, I get on my knees and I thank God for keeping me sober that day, when actually what's kept me sober is a lot of distraction and running at the show myself and being fortunate enough that I haven't cornered myself yet and I haven't drank. And I go to bed, and I was perfect. Absolutely perfect when I was doing that. It was absolutely miraculous that in a short period of time from the way I was living, that I was now a guy that got up every morning and prayed and went to bed every night and prayed on my knees. Absolutely outstanding. Miraculous. Bravo, Alcoholics Anonymous. Just, you know, another guy, another broken loser at the game of life being given a beginning in spirituality. But as I stayed here, I realized something that, you know, maybe people smarter than me would have figured this out, but it took me a couple of years to figure it out. I've never gotten in a particularly large amount of trouble on my knees next to my bed. That's not where I live my life. I found out that actually on my knees next to my bed seeking God, although it was what they were seeming to be telling me in Alcoholics Anonymous, really didn't have a lot of use, because that was a pretty safe place. I was alone. I wasn't really going anywhere or doing anything. There weren't any people to have conflict with. Yet that's the time I choose to commune with my higher power, when there's nothing going on. And so because there was nothing going on, I didn't have a lot to say to God about the reality that was my life. So I realized that between these two events that became my book and spirituality, that I had to figure out ways. And as I worked the steps and I got to 10 and 11, I realized this void. It was pointed out to me in the book, and I got the directions on how to fill in the space between these two events of book and spirituality. And I understood what they meant, that each day is a day I must carry a vision of God's will into all my activities. These are thoughts that must go with me constantly. Thy will, not my will, be done. I can exercise my willpower. My willpower. Wait a minute. I thought will was bad. No, no, no. It's how I use my will that's bad. I can exercise my willpower along those lines all I wish. I can seek God's will all day long. I can try to figure out what God would have me do all day long. I can live my thought plane along that line as much as I want. The book says it's proper use of the will. You gave me the answer. Thank you. This will be easy from here. I've got the two bookends. Now I'm going to fill it in. I'm going to exercise my willpower along these lines. All I wish, it's proper use of the will. Thank you very much. I'm never going to have a problem again. And guess what happened? I couldn't remember to do it. And I wanted to. And I mean that sincerely. And this is where some humility will really be helpful for you if you've had this struggle. And I'd love to tell you some long-winded thing about what the problem was and how I was blocked off and I had these deep inner, and I had abandonment issues. And, you know, that's crap. I just couldn't remember. And I wanted to remember. But I'm telling you, it was like I would leave the house in the morning. It was like somebody shot me out of a cannon. Go! And I just roared through my day. with my eyes closed, with my finger scraping the wall of life, just vibrating, you know? And I'd land in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting that night, and they go, "How was your day?" I go, "I don't really know. There was this thing and that person that I hated, and I got scared, and then I went here. And I just couldn't remember. It was happening. I didn't have any way to slow it down. I felt like life was happening without my permission. Like people were holding up emotional hoops, and I would just drive through them. And I'd talk to my sponsor, and I'd go, "They're pushing my buttons." He goes, "Well, you didn't have that button that said push me that was this big." And and humility is helpful. And I don't know what you'll have to do if you've experienced this or you're experiencing it, but I got a stack of Post-it notes. I wrote the word God on it. I stuck them in every place I could possibly see. I stuck them on the dash of my first beater car in sobriety. I stuck them on the mirror in the bathroom. I stuck them in my wallet with my money because I'm always looking at how little money I have, and that would be there. And I started having the word God stare back at me in my face in all areas of my life. I got a little $10 watch that had an alarm on it. And I set the alarm to go off every hour. It would go beep, 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 beep. And that was my indication that every hour, at least when I heard that beeping, it meant I was supposed to stop and say a short prayer and talk to God about what was going on in my life right then and there. And I got to tell you, there was a humility to it, and it didn't feel good at first. I was embarrassed by it. Am I so insipid and weak that even when I'm handed the solution on a silver platter, I can't accept it and use it in my life? When I was able to answer yes, I was able to start making some changes. So it was more important that I found out how to have a more effective conscious contact and fill in that time with God between those two bookend events than it was on how I looked. And it's funny how important it is to us how we look when nobody's watching, isn't it? Nobody can see these things, but I'm deathly afraid you'll know how difficult it is for me to access God. So I go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what do? I share eloquently about how much God's done for me and how much love I feel for my Creator. And then I go out with the wind blowing through my gut, and I can't talk about that, and I'm not being honest with my sponsor. And it's only through the process of humility when we go to another man in the form of a sponsor. And if we can't do that, we seek out a closed-mouthed friend, somebody that we feel safe, and maybe we run it by them before we get the guts to bring it to our sponsor, because I've done that a few times. Call them, you know, dress rehearsals with your buddies, because you don't care what they think. Shit, they're just your buddies. And well, you know, dude, you should shut up. I don't want your opinion, you know. I'm going to go talk to my sponsor. And being able to say that I was struggling with things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I knew that we did here, and I didn't know why I was struggling. You know, the way I found out that I'd get the Post-it notes is that wasn't my idea. I had a guy tell me that. I thought it was the silliest thing I'd ever heard. He said, "Well, you can do it or not do it, but it works." And I heard that, and I did it, and it started to work. The $10 watch I got, that's somebody else's idea. I'd heard about it in the meeting. When I got the watch, did it, started working. And suddenly, I start filling in the gaps between the morning and the evening that used to be filled with my self-will, which is still very alive and well and very healthy, but now we're inserting periods with God. Now we're inserting periods where I'm going to think about what God would have me do, what that looks like, what that action would be. I'm talking to my sponsor about the message that I'm getting. He's fine-tuning the message, and I'm starting to live on a different basis. I love the big book. Bill was a salesman. Bill played me like a fish when he wrote this book, and he's never going to meet me. Because I'm a guy that you can tell me what my problem is, and you can tell me what I have to do to fix it, but you better tell me what I'm going to get. Because that's just the way I'm cut. And Bill goes, "These are selfish, self-centered people just like me. We better make sure they know the good stuff that's attached to this, because they don't care about morality. They don't care about being good people. They don't care about society patting them on the back. They had all that stuff, a lot of them, and it didn't fix them. They got to know what's really involved here. The 11-step promises are on the bottom of page 87 through the 88. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." And here are the promises. If we do this, we are much less in danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we once did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. And that's the promise. And my experience has been this. I'm a guy that was basically drunk on the couch for 10 years. You know what I mean? I started out, had a really good time with life. Alcohol seemed to be an exciting addition to my life. And everything got better when you poured some alcohol on it. You know, a trip to the beach, a night with a beautiful woman, going to a rock show, whatever. I loved drinking. And I had this very full life. And by the end, it was just me and the bottle. And now I think about what I do in the matter of a week, and most men will identify, you know, you look back on what you did in the last week, or you think of something you did and it feels like it was a long, long time ago and it was just a couple of days ago, because there's been so much that's happened. We live very full, active lives. And one of the reasons that men in Alcoholics Anonymous are able to live these full, passionate, active lives, where, you know, sometimes we do more in a week than many people do in a month, because we're so intertwined in each other's life and there's so much service that we do, is we have the strength of God. This is not self-will that is propelling us through this thing called life. And the reason is when I'm following God's will, I'm given abundance of energy to do His work. So my prayers are about doing what God would have me do. And I tire less easily, I'm more efficient, and it does work. And I know, and the beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, like I said yesterday, if you're sober, one of the gifts is we get to do what we do and get what we get. And I just know how I feel at the end of the day when I've been running the show, and I know how I feel at the end of the day when I've just been trying to seek God's will and whatever's going on that day. And one of them is exhausting. I got to tell you, there's nothing more exhausting than running the show all day long when you really know there's a better way to go. And you ever get that day where at the end of the day you're like, Jesus, wasn't that bad a day, but I am just done. I mean, just, I've been rode hard and put away wet. Stick a fork in me, you know, and you just, but you think about it. If you look and you do your 10th step that night and you do your 11th step where you're reviewing your day, a lot of times when I do that, what I see is a lot of self-will. Question one. How was I resentful? Two, how was I selfish? Three, how was I dishonest? Four, how was I afraid? Five, do I owe an apology? Six, what have I wrongly kept secret? Seven, was I unkind? Eight, was I unloving? Nine, what could I have done better? 10, was I thinking of myself most of the time? 11, was I thinking of what I could do for others? 12, was I thinking of what I could pack into the stream of life? Now, because in the 11th step it's saying that we're careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, that we're going to constructively review our day, these are things that you want to make sure that you list in yourself. You do this either mentally or you write these things down. By the way, 10th and 11th step work, what I do with my guys is I have them write their 10th step and 11th step work for 30 days, and I tell them if they do that for 30 days, without missing a day, they will own that process and they'll be able to stop writing it completely out, and they'll be able to do it in their head in a quiet spot with paper and pen sitting next to them, because they'll know the questions so well they'll be able to run through them and be able to write notes as they go. But if you don't make that initial commitment, it's very hard to do mentally to do an accurate 10th and 11th step. You know, so you're going to have the book open with you so you remember the questions, and that's just been my experience. Let's just say that's been my experience. So with guys I work with, I always have them write everything out. 30 days, you can't miss a day. You read it to me on the phone the next day. It's an exercise, but it's a work habit building exercise. And it's the lazy man's way to do it, because I'd rather do something like uncomfortable, being inconvenienced for 30 days and own the process where I really understand it. Then I can just keep doing it. And it's not as difficult. I can do it in my head. I can ask those questions in my head and just take notes on it as I go along. But that's what I do. We want to list things that we did right. We want to talk about who did I help today? And we want to list everybody. I mean, you get into the habit of going to the store and being kind to the people behind the counter. I think that's something you should list. You know, everybody you meet is one of God's kids and an opportunity to bring some kindness and light into their life. You start having fun with that. List those things down. List those things down. What did I accomplish today? I mean, did you get up? Did you shave? Did you go to work? Did you give them a dime for a dime? Did you get a dollar for a dollar's work? You know what I'm saying? Did you do that stuff? Write that down. That's big stuff for us. You know, don't get jaded about the good things that we do every day. Don't take for granted the things that you're doing right. Give that side of life a fair hearing too. If we're just looking for what we're doing wrong, we're going to get worn out in this process. It's going to just take us apart. You got to be willing to look at the things you're doing right and thank God for those things. That's what keeps us going. You know, that there is progress being made. What am I grateful for today? Open up your mind and think about your blessings. Make sure you do that on a daily basis. Think about the good things in your life too. It's a lot easier to be positive and motivated and move forward if you realize the blessing that is your life. if you don't give that side of it a fair hearing, if you don't give your thought life time to think about how good it is. How many of us have been married to a sweet girl and, you know, it's only when they get unhappy with us that we realize how much we love them. It's only when we get scared that maybe they're pulling away from us that then we're going to show them how much we love them. And it's the flowers for, you know, injury theory. You know, I want to get my wife flowers when I'm doing, you know, 11th and 10th step work and I realize how lucky I am to have her. I want to get her flowers the next day. I don't want to wait till I screw up and I'm in trouble and say I'm sorry. You know, that doesn't seem to have the same effect. So I know I spent a lot of time on the 11th step and the 10th step. Keeping in mind, by the time we get to 10, 11, and 12, we've already had a spiritual awakening. We are living in the realm of the spirit. If we stay there, if we're able to maintain this daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. What is the maintenance? It's the work we do 10, 11, and 12. So it's very important that once you get through the steps, you say, I've worked the steps. You should have some type of plan of action. If you don't have one, you can put the one together with your sponsor, but there should be something structured that we're doing on a daily basis to keep us in the game. And this is not because we're moral people, and this is not because we want to be good men. It's because we're lazy. Tap into your self-centeredness and your sloth, and realize it's the easier, softer way to keep the boulder rolling. Once it gets rolling, it's easy to keep it rolling. But if it stops, it's a son of a gun to get it going. It's much easier to keep active in Alcoholics Anonymous than it is to become active in Alcoholics Anonymous. Once you get there, it's a lot easier to stay there. Brings us to the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. The principle at work here is service. Now, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, published in 1939, Alcoholics Anonymous has changed. Our membership has changed. The way recovery occurs outside of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous has changed. Talking to my friend Martin C. with 55 years of sobriety and asking him, what was AA like when you got sober? Did you go to a lot of meetings? He said, and he got sober in Los Angeles. He says, well, you know, we had some meetings going on. There were a bunch of meetings, but we usually went to about a meeting a week, and then we hung out at the clubhouse, you know, and that's the police would call, and the hospitals would call, and families would call, and friends would call, because there was no detox. There was a little spin dry about 60 miles east of Los Angeles, but that was the only thing we knew of. And there was no treatment center. There were no treatment centers at the time. And when people got an alcoholic and they didn't know what to do with them, they called Alcoholics Anonymous. So mostly we went on 12-step calls. Now, just curious, how many men in this room have been on a 12-step call? Just raise your hand. Okay. How many have been on, that go on an average of 10 a month? 5 a month? 1 a month? Okay. So 1 a month, we got 3 hands. Other than that, no. Now, when I was talking to Martin, I've talked to other long-timers, they were going on 12-step calls basically every night. So now this isn't about we're doing it wrong. This is about we have to understand what's changed, okay? And what's changed is it's very common that now when somebody makes it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a reason that it's easier to get to the rooms. One, the fierce misunderstanding and social stigma associated with alcoholism, which still does exist today, exists nowhere to the degree that it did in 1939. Nowhere to the degree. Where it means loss of reputation, job, standing in the community, a lot of things if they found out you were alcoholic. My God, people, it's a new legal defense now. People brag about being alcoholic. Recovery has become chic. And it's big business. Once the American Medical Association declared alcoholism as a disease, it became a billable commodity. And that's what brought up the treatment centers, because now there was money to be made. And that's an outside issue, but I want you to understand the history and the evolution. So it's not unusual. How many men in this room went to treatment when they got sober? Okay, so we got at least half of the room went to treatment. Now, I know if I had the opportunity to talk to you guys on an individual basis, every one of you would say the treatment was helpful to you in some regard. And I wish I had gone to treatment, because I've heard it described to me by men, and I could have used that sequestered environment, if nothing else, to be physically separated from alcohol where I couldn't get my hands on it as long as I kept my ass in that facility. That would have been a good thing for me. Because for my first 3 days, the big trick was to go home. Luckily, the first half of that, I was getting picked up by the family, and the other half, I knew they'd be looking for me shortly after if I didn't make it home. But that was my big plan of action. Go home and don't leave once you're in bed. Go home, don't leave once you're in bed, you know. Now, because of this, we are not getting the 12-step work. They're actually talking about this. They did in April and at the general conference, and I'm waiting to hear our delegates report in June when she comes and presents, and that they're talking about our 12-step work and our lost legacy to that. And I don't think it's necessarily a lost legacy. I just think it's something that we have to keep in mind, and it's a little bit different. I think it's wonderful that Alcoholics Anonymous is more available to more people. I have friends with long-term sobriety that have gotten sober through the courts, that have gotten sober through Alcoholics Anonymous being carried into correctional facilities. All these things that we weren't doing in 39 or the years that follow, all the things that have grown out of Alcoholics Anonymous, all these different things in the service structure that stay with our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers, to carry this message, all these things were born out of necessity. Now, out of this necessity, what's happened is we've also, I think, become less effective at carrying the message to an alcoholic one-on-one. I think sometimes we forget with our 12-step work exactly how to do it because of this metamorphosis that's gone on. I think that once we're sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and we've worked the 12 steps, that's very important. Even before that, when we're early in sobriety, particularly as sponsors of men, that we understand that we have to teach what we were taught, the absolute necessity to start giving it away immediately. Absolutely essential to staying sober is to give it away. And how can we do that? Because we're not going out on 12-step calls. That's not happening in Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. Now if somebody has a problem with alcohol, they can literally go to a detox center. When we do that, we know where the detox center is in our town. We get calls from the 12-step hotline. We pick guys up, and if they're like out of their minds in alcohol, the first thing you do is you separate them from the alcohol and you take them to the detox. And then you're hopefully going to be there when they get out. But it's not the same as in the old days where they passed a drunk around from one person to another person. They did that phone tag and they babysat with somebody until they could get them into the meetings. It just isn't done that way anymore. But that doesn't relieve us of how are we going to stay sober and do this work mentioned. So when you read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of the suggestions in the beginning of the chapter deal with working with people that are still drinking. And sometimes I think we forget that our legacy is based on working with wet drunks. That when we carry this message to the alcoholic that still suffers, the implication is he's still drinking. Now, I'm not saying we don't, you know, I think it's interesting at the end of meetings, people say, you know, a moment of silence for the alcoholic still suffering in and out of the rooms. Well, you know what? I think the guy out of the rooms is suffering a little bit more than the guy in the rooms. That's just my opinion. And I think we forget that we still have the ability to do that. But how do you do it? Imagine what it was like in the old days. You go to a meeting a week, you sit around and you go, hey, Chris, what are you doing, man? You want to go to the hospital, see if we can scare up a drunk? Yeah, just go do that, John. You know, and you go to the hospital and you go talk to the nurse. You go, you got any really bad drunks? Bad ones. We want the mean ones. You got any? That's the ones we want to go save, you know. And we don't do that kind of stuff anymore. We don't need to do it because we have hospitals and institutions. We have public information. We have all these service structures that do this stuff for us. So one of the things that we can do as alcoholics, if we want to be formally involved in the 12-step work, is to get into service work. Because one of the nice things about Alcoholics Anonymous, the way our seventh tradition is set up, we're all involved in service work to a degree. It's one of the beautiful things about dropping a couple of dollars in the basket when you're at your meeting. You know something. If you're part of a home group that follows the suggestions in Alcoholics Anonymous and how we work with our money, we know we're going to be self-supporting at the home group. We're also going to make a donation at district, at area, and at GSO. So you know that you're actually funding all arms and all fingers of the service structure by doing a simple action and dropping a couple of bucks in. But we also have the opportunity to take that further. We have an opportunity to get involved in panel work, institutional work, corrections and treatment work, to find out if our home group has a corrections and treatment rep. Are they active at the district level? Is your group volunteering to do work at local hospitals and local detoxes? We do that in our groups on a monthly basis, at least once a week. Our group's going into the detox center, or we're going into St. Joe's Hospital, and we're putting on Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And we have people that have just recently been separated from alcohol, and they are twitching and they are shaking and they are having a tough time. And we get to go in there as members of Alcoholics Anonymous and carry this message to the alcoholic that still suffers. And what's the message? You don't have to hurt no more. there's another way to go about this thing. We share our experience, strength, and hope. And if you do it correctly and you share in a general way what you were like, what happened, and what you're like now, whoever's in that room will experience the gift of identification. And they'll say, this guy knows what he's talking about. He knows how I feel. I've never talked to anybody about this stuff before, and yet I'm identifying with him. And he may know he can't stay sober in a million years, but he may be intrigued to know how you did it. There's a treatment bridge program and there's a corrections bridge program. We lose most people when they get out of treatment within the first 2 weeks. We lose them usually because they get out of treatment and don't immediately go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a very good program you can get involved in. Your GSR and your home group should be able to help you do that, which is the bridge program, which is simply that if somebody leaves treatment in your area, because sometimes people go to treatment 150 miles away from where they live, and they get out of treatment, and they're going to go home. If you're part of the bridge program, that means that when someone gets out of treatment, they're going to have your number, and you're going to be able to be contacted by them. And your obligation is this and nothing more. You're willing to take them to meetings for about a week. So when somebody comes back to this part of the state who went into treatment in another part of the state, if they're willing to pick up that phone and they're going to be instructed to do so by their counselors and they call up a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you have the opportunity to take somebody new to recovery and show them around the AA community where they live. And that transition, the failure rate goes way down because of this program, if we can get people involved in this program. But one of the problems that program's having right now is getting volunteers involved in it with enough. Because unfortunately, Alcoholics Anonymous in some places continues to be 10% of the people do 90% of the work. And that's not about, and that's dangerous. It's dangerous for the 10%. It's dangerous for the 90. It's dangerous for the 10% because your ego can move in and you can think you're better than other people because you're doing more. And it's dangerous for the 90 because they're not getting the opportunity to participate in their own recovery and carrying the message. The way that we formally do carry the message to the alcoholics who suffers in, for lack of a better term, would be modern AA, you know, or current AA, is through sponsorship. It's the way that we do this probably more than anything. And the one thing that isn't different when you read the whole chapter, working with others, is there's a theme through the whole thing, which is you're going to give away what's freely been given to you, but if somebody isn't interested in your solution, if somebody isn't willing to avail themselves of what you have to offer, move on and leave it friendly. To spend time with one alcoholic who isn't interested in our solution is to deny another alcoholic the opportunity to get sober. He may be more open-minded towards our solution after he goes and hurts himself a little bit more. I've heard it say that you can never drive somebody out of Alcoholics Anonymous that King Alcohol won't drive back in. One of the things that I think we need to keep in mind, and my sponsor talks to me about it, and a lot of the old timers talk about it, is the absolute necessity of not watering down this program. You know, a lot of us were fortunate enough to be given Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form, and for me, I know I owe the men that I sponsor nothing less than what's been given to me, and I don't want to water it down. The way it was taught to me, my first sponsor told me that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps, the principles, and the loving God that I would find here are perfect in nature. They're perfect ideas, perfect principles. And he said, Don, do you think alcoholics are perfect? And I said, of course not. We're anything but perfect. He goes, okay, so do you think the alcoholic should become malleable and flexible and fit himself to the program? Or do you think the program should become malleable and flexible and fit itself to the alcoholic? And it was an easy answer. So what I've been trying to do for the time that I've spent here is become malleable and flexible and fit myself to the principles and ideas and steps of and the loving God that I found here and what he would have me do, become open-minded and flexible and malleable towards those things. And I think it's important that when we work with people, we have such a strong desire to help. Such a strong desire to help. But we can be screwing somebody out of their own recovery by watering down the program and not requiring them to do the things that we were required to get sober. There is work involved here. I want to talk about sponsorship a little bit with the time I have left. Because it's really our way that we carry the message to the alcohol that still suffers. I don't care if you've ever sponsored before. I don't care how much time you have. The only requirement, and it's only a suggested requirement in the big book of alcohol, or in the pamphlet questions and answers on sponsorship, they say it's a good idea that you have a year of continuous sobriety and you worked all 12 steps of recovery. Now, I don't, that's not my experience for me. The first guy I started sponsoring, I was 6 months sober. I went on a 12-step call with two members of my home group, and Donnie was sitting there with a bottle of Jack Daniels in front of him, and he said, okay, so you guys are going to talk me out of drinking the rest of this bottle, right? And we said, well, we don't exactly do that, Donnie. And we all took our shots at him, and I gave him my best, you know, 6 months on fire with AA, rah, rah, you don't have to live this way anymore dissertation, and Donnie kept drinking his Jack Daniels, saying, uh-huh. And so we made a big impression on him that night. And we all left him our phone numbers and said we'd like to see him again, and if he'd like to go to a meeting, we'd really like to take him. And he said, oh, well, I'll think about it. And the next day, Donnie called me, and Donnie picked me up for a meeting because I didn't have a car yet. And and we went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Donnie asked me to sponsor him at the break. And I said, I'll be right back. And I ran over to my sponsor, and I said, this guy Donnie asked me to sponsor him, so do you want to sponsor him, or do you want to have your sponsor Lou sponsor him? Because I can't sponsor him. I've only got 6 months. I haven't worked all 12 steps and blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, what'd you say to him? I said, I'd be right back. He goes, you didn't say yes? And I go, no. He goes, oh, great. So the guy's like his first day in AA. It's probably the hardest thing in the world. He asks for help, and you tell him you don't know yet. Good. Well, why don't you go say yes or let him die? Make up your mind. So I go ahead. I tell Donnie, yes, I have no idea what I'm going to be doing, which really made me an effective sponsor in the beginning because I had no experience, but I had no opinions. So Donnie would ask me questions as we went along, and I go, I don't know, Donnie. Let's see what the book says. And we'd be flipping through the book looking for the answer because I didn't know. And you never know why people are put in your life, and you never know. I didn't know much about Alcoholics Anonymous at 6 months sober. I didn't have the experience I have now, sober experience. I hadn't worked all 12 steps, but I was willing to help another alcoholic, and I was willing to do anything I could to help Donnie stay sober. And Donnie and I went to meetings every day together, and I was at a discussion or a book study meeting with Donnie shortly after I started working with him, and at this meeting, he read a paragraph, and men shared on it, and he passed the book, and I noticed when the book came around Donnie, he passed it two times in a row. So I thought, well, you know, I got to be a sponsor, let him know we don't do that. So after the meeting, I said, hey, Donnie, you know, when it is your turn to read, go ahead and read. You know, it's just what we do here. It's a way of participating. And Donnie looked down at his shoes. He said, you know, I don't read so good. I said, really? He goes, I can barely read. I just can't do that. I don't know what most of the words are. And I wasn't embarrassed that I had brought that up. I didn't feel bad. I didn't say, oh, God, Donnie, I'm so sorry. I hope I didn't embarrass you. That's okay. You don't have to read. It was the most natural thing in the world. You know what came out of my mouth? I said, I can read. I said, I can show you how to read. So after meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, every night for 6 months, we went to Donnie's house and we read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Donnie would read it out loud to me as I read my copy of the book. And when Donnie got stuck in a word, I would tell him what the word was. And Donnie would always say, I'm sorry, but what's this word? And about the fifth time Donnie said that, I said, Donnie, we got to stop that right now. You can't say you're sorry anymore. You know, there's a lot of things you're good at that I bet I suck at. This isn't about good or bad. This is about I'm trying to help you with this. You don't have to say you're sorry. It's an honor and a privilege. And it was. And Donnie sober today. He's got 6 months less than me. And if you saw Donnie reading the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous from the big book or any book that you could hand him, you would never know that Donnie had a problem with reading. And that's not something I did for Donnie. That's something that the principal of 12-step work did for Donnie. That was just one alcoholic giving what he had to another alcoholic. And what does that have to do with staying sober? Everything. Because I'll tell you, it's our feelings of difference and our feelings of inadequacy and our feelings of I just don't fit in here either that take a lot of us out the door. And a lot of what we have to do when we work with men and we carry this message to the alcoholic that still suffers, a lot of what we have to do, we already know how to do. We just have to tap into it. And one of the things that I try to remember is what it was like to be new. So scared, so sure this thing wouldn't work for me. And I try to remember what impressed me when I was new. Was it the things I heard? Was it the great eloquation that men expanded on in meetings? I don't remember any of that crap. You know what I remember? Kindness. That was the stuff that impressed me. sober men would take the time to invite me to their homes, invite me to have a cup of coffee after the meeting, sit with me, talk with me, look me in the eyes, seemed like they were interested in my silly stories. It made me feel welcome and safe and secure. I remember kindness. How do you do 12-step work? How do you carry this message to the alcoholic that still suffers? How do you do that? You do it the way it was done to you. You search your own memory in Alcoholics Anonymous. You ask yourself what worked for you. What left an indentation on your heart? What made you feel like maybe you want to go back there again? What made you feel like there was hope? Was it some guy barking at you and telling you what you had to do in recovery? Maybe. Some of what I remember most fondly is a guy that cared enough about me to tell me the truth. The truth comes in a lot of different guises here in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I remember the kindness, and I remember the time that men took with me. You know, I don't owe Alcoholics Anonymous anything less than my life, but what I owe the men of Alcoholics Anonymous to come in after me, that, and this isn't just the men I sponsor, this is anybody that's come in the room after me, is my time that I'm willing to be inconvenienced for my fellow alcoholic. The book is very clear. It gives us a whole list of all these wonderful things, and keep in mind how easy we have it today. Page 97, this is what Bill wrote because this is what was going on in the meetings that he was going to and the work that they were going to in the Oxford group before they started having AA meetings, and this is what they did to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. It said, never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you're doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money in your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, jails, hospitals, asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally, you will have to meet such conditions. We got it easy. But I think that I know this. Some of the hardest things I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous in terms of 12-step work and inconvenience, you know, picking up that guy that lives way out of your way, you know, night after night after night, and then the son of a bitch gets drunk, and then he calls you for another ride, night after night after night, you know. Those are the things that I think back on that I realize helped me grow spiritually. It's not the easy stuff. It's not the convenient stuff. I don't want this to be true. But I know that the extent that I'm willing to be inconvenienced for my fellow alcoholic is the extent that I walk with God. And you see, that's not what I want. My self-centered nature, what I want is a sober life with all the bells and whistles. I want to be able to go to meetings, get called on to share, and share something really spiritual so people go, I really like what you had to say. It was really helpful. Oh, it was nothing. God speaks through me. It wasn't that good. You know, and I want my ego to be secure. I want this nice life that I have, and I don't want to be inconvenienced for my fellow alcoholic. That is my self-centered self, and that will lead me back to a drink of alcohol, and I'll miss the true joy in life. You know, I'll miss the true joy in life. And I'll tell you, the book promises me that this is something I don't want to miss. And my experience in this has been, you know, there's something that everybody, and I asked this of the men I sponsor, and I've asked this of our men's group when we were having a business meeting, and I'll ask this of you guys, and it's just something to keep in mind. You know, ask yourself the question, who is Alcoholics Anonymous? And you need to understand that we, every one of us in this room, every one of us, no more or no less than the man sitting next to you, we are Alcoholics Anonymous. This is our watch. Bill and Bob are gone. This is our watch. What we do in a one day at a time program decides where Alcoholics Anonymous goes from here. I hear a lot of stuff about the health of Alcoholics Anonymous and the recovery. I don't care about any of that. I know that God is all-loving and all-powerful, so I'm not concerned. Alcoholics Anonymous will be fine. But what I am concerned about is I get lonely. And I try to get the guys that I sponsor involved because I don't want to do it alone. I want to do Alcoholics Anonymous together. One of the things I felt at this retreat this weekend that was the most powerful thing for me was the unity. Unity, it's palatable. You can feel it. You can sense it. You can see it in the eyes of men when they look at each other. You can hear it in the laughter they exchange. You can hear it in the stories that they're willing to tell each other. There are men I didn't know before this weekend, and we sat down and we told each other things that in normal society, people would be gasping and falling out of chairs. And we told these stories among ourselves, and we don't even know each other, but we know each other. We have a common bond. And having, like the book says, having shared in a common peril, that's only one element in the powerful cement that binds us. But it couldn't bind us like we are now. It's the solution we can agree upon. There's a part in the book that when I read it, it causes me a little embarrassment and shame. And that's why I like it so much. I always like the idea of disturbing the comfortable and comforting the disturbed. And that's what the book does to me. You know, I get comfortable and the book disturbs me sometimes. And there's a part in there that says, having shared in a common peril, having been restored and united under one God, the things that matter so much to some people signify little to them. How could they? And what that means is, if we've all had this common experience, if we've been restored and united under one God, the things that mean so much to other people that haven't had that experience of loss and then resurrection, those things shouldn't mean as much to us. Now, I think that those things, and we know what I'm talking about with those things, I think they're fine, and I have some of them, and I like them, and I hope they don't go away, but my heart can't be set on them. And I think in Alcoholics Anonymous, we got to remember what we do here. And that's the thing that I love so much about. I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. I'm going to try to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And it's the message that was carried to me that I don't have to drink anymore. And I don't have to fight it. And I don't have to feel the way I was feeling. And the next thing says, I'm going to practice these principles in all my affairs. I cannot do that without God's help. I am not moral, I am not strong enough, I am too self-centered on my own to do that. But by the time I've gotten through 9 of these steps, I've had a spiritual awakening. I understand, I feel the nearness of my Creator. And if I'm doing 10, 11, and 12, and I'm doing it in an honest manner, I can't help but practice these principles in all my affairs. And we've talked a little bit about the principles this weekend. And the thing that we have the opportunity to do as we go out from here is not to rush down to our lives full of energy and full of fire and full of enthusiasm and then burn out, you know, like a shooting star. You know, what I'm going to do as I go home is I'm going to thank God from the bottom of my heart that I got to spend time with you guys this weekend. And I don't know, and I'll never really know if I've helped anybody or done anything like that. I don't even know if this was God's will for me to be. I'll know later. It'll be revealed to me. But usually that's how it is. But I do know this. I will be grateful for the things in my life that are concerned. I know the honesty I was able to bring from this podium, that I do this stuff, I live this stuff, and I feel clean about that. I really do. I don't know. I don't need to know what that means to you. It means a lot to me that I'm not over-demonstrating here, that I'm a good member and standing with Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I'm so glad I found this place. But I'll think about the things that I've said, and I'll think about the things that I do. And all this weekend, I've been thinking about things I can do a little bit better with the guys I sponsor. And maybe something I could start with the guys I sponsor. And maybe something I need to do in terms of the judgment and the resentment that I sometimes experience with the AA that I'm in. And maybe some of these principles that aren't being applied as strong and as healthy as they are in my work life. You know, all these thoughts have been floating through my mind. And I was doing some 10th and 11th step work last night before I got in the rack. And I had some things written down, you know, because I got some stuff I want to take to my sponsor. So this weekend has been a retreat. I'm not just the facilitator. It's been my retreat, too, because by sharing with you men and having to experience this literature, it's had a profound effect on me. Now I get to leave from here, and I get to work on some things, and I get to do what I do every day. You know, I get to stay in the process and become a better man. And all I want to do is serve God and clean house. You know what I mean? I just want to do the basics. I want to fit myself to be a maximum service to God and the people around me. And I do it for completely selfish and self-centered reasons. I do it because I like the way it makes me feel. Very early in this, we talked about why we drink. Silkworth had it right. Alcoholics drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. Why do we do AA the way it's outlined in the book? We do AA the way it's outlined in the book essentially because we like the effect produced by the steps in living this way. And I hope you keep that in mind. If you think about alcoholism, treated or untreated, you're going to be one or the other because you got this thing for life like luggage. It doesn't go anywhere. So what you do with it's up to you. But I know what I'm going to try to continue to do and what I've been lucky enough to do to this point. I'm going to stay in the process. And my experience has been this and nothing less, and it's a promise from the book, and I'll close with this, and we'll call it a weekend. It's the things that came to me when I placed myself in God's hands were greater than anything I could have planned for myself. I could have never put the life together that I have today. The feelings I have in my stomach, the clarity I have in my head, I didn't know that those were available to a guy like me. I'm having the best life of anybody I know. I wouldn't change places with anybody on the planet. And when I got here, I would have been anybody else gladly. Something's changed here for me, and it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank you guys for listening and giving me a great weekend. Thanks.